Welcome to the Focus Forward Business Podcast for sturdymckee.com.
Hey, I'm Sturdy McKee here on the Focus Forward Business Podcast with Christopher Salem. Chris is a CEO, business growth strategist, keynote speaker, award-winning author, business trainer, and radio host who focuses on helping businesses and leaders improve engagement, retention, client acquisition, customer experience, and overall revenue. Chris has a deep understanding of challenges faced by small businesses in volatile economies, which we're going into, and has developed effective strategies to maximize growth. Salem's book, Master Your Inner Critic, became an international bestseller in 2016, and he's worked with organizations like JPMorgan Chase, Rockefeller, GE Research, U.S. Senate, and he's spoken at universities like Harvard and University of Harvard. Thanks for being here, Christopher. We appreciate it.
Sturdy, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So tell the audience a bit more about yourself and what you're working on right now.
Well, I'm a business acceleration strategist and an executive coach. I work with organizations both internally and externally. We start from the inside out. And some of the things I'm working on right now is helping to really have companies understand that the foundation of any effective leadership in bringing unity together in the workplace to create now more valuable experiences to the clients they serve starts with how we think. And that's also with our emotional intelligence and learning how to channel emotional intelligence by first becoming self-aware, being the example of that, thus then helping others to do the same, and then how that can project outward to the industry and the clients they serve to create more valuable experiences.
What's a key to becoming more aware, more insightful around your own emotional intelligence? Can you share something with us there?
Sure. Well, by doing that, you're able to really pinpoint, like, what are the things that you can control versus what you can't control? A lot of times as individuals, because of our survival mindset and how we think, we're more conditioned to get caught up in the past and the future, not in the moment. And then when we're in the past and the future, this is where fear thrives. And where fear thrives, we get caught up in stress, anxiety, feeling overwhelmed, frustrated. And we have the tendency to attach ourselves emotionally to outcomes, results that we're seeking. And that magic, that word we always hear, expectations, is always tied to that, because we get caught up in the control we can't control. What emotional intelligence understands is, how can we learn to think in the moment from intentions, what we can control versus what we can't control, and focus on the things that we can control each and every day as human beings at an individual level. That is our communication to ourselves and others, our behavior, our attitude, it's happening for you, not to you, our emotions and how we respond versus react to situations and other people, and our action. When we can learn to now channel our energy to what we can control, letting go of what we can't control, we become more self-aware, not only in ourselves, but now to our outside surroundings, to really observe other people and what they're doing. And that could dictate how we communicate more effectively to them and leading by example to inspire them to do the same.
Cool. Thank you. So you're in your work, I know you're an advocate of compounding growth. So can you explain a little bit about what that looks like in a small business?
Yeah, if you're looking at a small business, it's always about how can we increase revenue, but better yet, not just increasing revenue, but more importantly, how do we increase our net profit margin? Many times companies, regardless of size, really do not have a firm foundation over what their market dominating position is, their unique value proposition. So this means, what is the problem or challenge that your organization, company solves? What is the results that your audience is seeking but doesn't have? Now, many times we just assume and speculate what that is. And thus, when that happens, we don't have a clear alignment to what really is the case. And thus why our marketing and our PR and our sales efforts, including sales enablement, are not in alignment and not connecting. So we spend a lot of time and money and we're not really maximizing our lead gen process. We're not converting, and thus we're not converting, you know, be able to leverage new customers that can lead to new upsells, cross sales, and then referrals for new business. So compounding really understands that when you can have an effective market dominating position that truly connects overall with the challenge and provides insights to the results that they seek that they don't have, you're more likely through the buyer's journey to connect through your lead gen process, to convert them, have more conversions, thus as they become clients, because of those relationships and understanding who they are and what really drives them and what they're looking for, we can generate more sales through upsells, cross sales, and then referrals for more business. And these are the things that through the compounding effect, through the five areas of profit, are what will escalate revenue and thus increase net profit margin over time.
Okay, so how are we figuring out what the customer needs? Because I have an
assessment. We do an assessment where we can look at where are the missed revenue opportunities. Often, again, it comes down to a lack of a market dominating position, or it's not effective. Number two, they don't have the correct policies and procedures for their sales and marketing in place. A lot of companies may think they have, but they're not really specific, clear, and concise enough. So there's a lack of there. And that would be considered the foundation level. Now, when we get into the lead gen, they may be tied to only certain things and not exploiting their audience on multiple touch points. That could be through trade shows. It could be through networking. It could be through speaking at industry events or business events. It could be through podcasts. It could be through email marketing. It could be through a wide variety of different channels. But if we're not effectively aligning to their challenges and then speaking to the results that they're seeking that they don't have across those touch points multiple times, we're not gauging them enough to convert those leads into customers. That's often the things. So the compounding effect goes from the foundation to the lead gen, to the conversions, to leveraging existing client relationships, to then increasing prices where applicable. And then where can we cut cost and lower, overhead and cost of goods sold in order to, increase the bottom line and thus increase the profit margin.
Now, you brought up the UVP a couple of times, value proposition, your market dominating position, if you will. How do you figure out what that is?
Well, you got to be able to look at who's their audience. Who's the audience that they're serving? What is their true challenges? A lot of times we think we know what the challenges are, but we're not clear. Sometimes they're not always just out there. You have to do perhaps some market research, do a market survey. You have to gather intelligence to determine what that challenge is overall. Not every client is going to have their own unique challenge, but somehow they're all going to be very similar and roll up to a general challenge that you can solve. And so it's understanding what the challenge is and then what are the results that they're seeking. Because if you're not sure what the results they're seeking, and sometimes they may not know what the results are seeking. So you have to be able to kind of imply that in some way to get them to think, wow, that is what I'm looking for. But without that information, to the challenge first, how can we provide a result if we're not truly aligning with their challenge or their pain point? That's where that has to become clear in order to build a solid foundation for the compounding effect to come into place with the lead gen, to the conversion process, leveraging existing client relationships, to increasing prices, you're learning how to bundle services to get more perceived value. There's a lot of other things. I could spend an hour talking about that. And then, of course, how do we cut back on certain costs that are not necessarily serving us? Not to sacrifice quality of your product or service, but knowing that where you could cut back and can now control your costs to increase your bottom line. These are the organizations that will then experience when that is truly in sync, a compounding effect with their revenue acceleration and then increasing their net profit margin. Just increasing revenue is not enough. You have to be able to improve the net profit margin. And that is a combination of, increasing more revenue, making sure your collections are less than 30 days in terms of getting paid, and then controlling your cost, and thus there's your net operating income from there.
Mm-hmm. So let's tie that back to the emotional intelligence. How can you use that? How can you use your awareness maybe start
so when you are,
some of this stuff psychologically versus logically.
When you have a team that's really in sync of, you know, who they are, you know, individually, then as a team, and then as an organization, this is what lends itself now to a way to better understand this whole process. What are the challenges? What are the things that they're emotionally, what stirs up certain emotions in their customers in terms of how they buy and what they're looking for? We begin to be more acute to those cues of to what, you know, what's important to them. It's also important in terms of building rapport, not with only one another, but also with your customers, learning how to build rapport. So I'll give you a perfect example of how this works. Zappos, which is a leading online shoe retailer. Now, what there's no coincidence why this company year after year is ranked top five for customer service. Why? Because they have a foundation internally that they operate from a place of mindfulness, emotional intelligence, understanding each other's role and duties, communicating at a very high level. They have daily huddles. They understand each other and know how to leverage each other's strengths and offset each other's weaknesses. Now, when this now reflects outward to the customers they serve, it's not about just providing shoes. It's about creating an experience. It's about putting a smile on somebody's face. If you look at their mission statement, their mission statement's all about putting a smile on someone's face each and every day. It's not about selling shoes. It's about the experience. So Zappos understands the power of utilizing emotional intelligence, how to build a thriving workplace culture that is interdependent versus codependent. And through that effective communication and leading by example, lends itself in how it reflects in how they serve their customers. And thus, understanding also the revenue and profit acceleration process, they're able to do things and offer certain things that help to increase their revenue, their net profit margin, thus why they're always recognized as an ideal case study for any business, you know, thing that you discuss, that they are often brought up in those discussions because of the process that they embark on each and every day.
How have they carried that over? Because wasn't Zappos purchased by Amazon?
It was purchased by Amazon, yeah. So, I mean, I'm talking about back when they started, and even to this day, they still operate. But, I mean, of course, they're under Amazon. But nonetheless, I mean, from what I've seen, you know, since Tony Hsieh had passed away a few years ago, that they're still able to operate, you know, in the way they've always been since their inception.
So let's give an example of another company that kind of figured out their purpose. You brought that up, like your purpose. And how does that maybe tie in to this whole connecting with your target customer?
Well, a lot of times it could be with values. What are the values that really, you know, really align with your organization, your people? Maybe it's how you hire certain people based upon those shared values. They don't have to be the same values, but values that align in a way that bring people together to understand each other. It's not about who's right, who's wrong, whose idea. It's about what's best for the situation. Then how does that reflect to the customers you're serving? Does that mean that everything you do serves everybody? No. You know, the businesses that really truly understand who they align with and who they can serve based upon, you know, shared values are more or less going to outperform other companies that feel they can just serve anybody. It doesn't matter where they're coming from. Again, the reality is you're never going to be everything for everyone, but you'll always be something for someone. And the thing is, if you take into account the emotional intelligence piece, where how we connect on shared values, that can be quite effective in terms of how we can better serve those people and really be more than just a product or service to them. But as a trusted advisor, what is really important to them? You're not going to be everything to them in terms of what's important to them. But if you can understand that and be a piece that can help them to achieve that in some way by what you provide in your product or service, you're more valuable to them. You are a resource for them other than just a product or service.
So how do you help business owners, founders, and stuff figure these
things out? So what we do is, we come in and we assess, you know, what is their mission? What is their vision of where they are and where they desire to go? We look at the people that are in place. We want to make sure there's, you know, where there's bottlenecks in communication, lack of leadership, and we work on that. We work on really clearly defining the roles and duties and responsibilities for each of the teams and how they interdependently work together. We teach them how to learn how to focus on their own role and duties and not depend upon each other, but complement one another. It's a big difference. Learning to operate from intentions rather than expectations. That when we can now really maximize our role and duties and now come together and do it in a way to complement one another, we can now create better communication, better leadership, and how we now serve our clients in terms of how we service them, create an experience that they're looking for, and thus, obviously, you know, have repeat business as a result of it, getting referrals and so on. So a lot of times emotional intelligence not only gets involved in the internal side of building the team to unify, bring people together to elevate that communication, but it's also reflects in how you connect with your audience in terms of your message. It's not about your product and service and what makes you unique. Nobody cares. It's about, again, how do you help them to solve their challenges? How can you help them to create results that they're seeking that they don't have? That's going to give them more sustainability in terms of moving their business along, or if it's personal, to how it's going to help them in their personal lives and so on. So these are the things that when there is a strategy and a plan and people are owning that responsibility on an individual level, then a team level, and then as an organization level, those are the organizations that usually for the most part come out ahead in a more sustainable way to grow and serve their industry or clients they serve.
Yeah, you talked earlier about a unique value proposition, not a unique me proposition, right? It's the value you bring to your customers.
Yep.
So, okay, so one of the things you said there was you want to get people to complement each other and not be dependent upon each other. How do you make that actually start to come together? What does that look like in operations?
Well, it all comes down to also, again, communication. It's how you communicate to yourself in each and every day, how you communicate to your people, your teammates, your peers, your boss, people who work for you. Most communication in most workplaces is heavily codependent. You have passive communicators, you have aggressive communicators, a combination of both. Typically, passive communicators are yes people. They say yes to everything. They take on more than they can. They tend to not live up to other people's expectations, and they oftentimes get walked on, meaning that they get taken advantage of. It's because they don't respect their own rights and responsibilities to their own communication process, but only the other people. Aggressive people tend to be perfectionists. They have a hard time living up to their own expectations and others. They also have a hard time trusting and delegating certain things to other people. And this oftentimes can cause a bottleneck in organizations. So when we can learn, you know, to move away from codependent styles of communication and be more specific, clear, and concise. And what that means is there's no room for assumption or speculation that you thought somebody knew what you were saying or what you thought they should know. We are very specific, clear, and concise with our communication, regardless if we're the sender or the receiver. We can't assume someone's going to do their part. We have to take that responsibility, whether if we're receiving the communication or sending it, that we have to be specific, clear, and concise. And when we can be that example, and hopefully that other people begin to do the same thing, that creates more interdependency. We begin to own our role and duties. We begin to operate from intentions, not expectations. We learn to focus on what we could control versus what we can't. Those five things I mentioned before. And these are the things that over time, now I'm not saying this is easy to do and something that by any means any organization has perfected, but there are organizations out there, few that have done, are doing this and are making huge progress. So it's just a matter of, you know, are you willing to commit to that process? It starts at the individual level, then the team level, and then the organization level. It's not the other way around. Many people are waiting for their organization to change and to do this. You know, teams are waiting for, you know, their people to do this and this. No, it's got to start with the people. You, regardless of your role and duty, you have to own your change to be the change, to be the example, to move on and help others to do the same. That's what where true change happens. And those are the organizations that are using the EQ to do that are going to come out ahead. Those are the ones that are going to be more impactful for the customers they serve, whether if they're involved directly in the sale process or sales enablement with marketing. And I'm a firm believer that when that is in sync, those are the companies that really understand their industry and audience really well.
So if I'm a leader, how do I foster that change? I can't just wait for the frontline people organically to decide or listen to your podcast.
Yeah. So one of the things that, you know, it starts with awareness. You know, it's something, we're doing something here on a podcast. It could be through a training, a lunch and learn. Now, that alone is not going to make the difference. It's got to create the awareness that now that am I willing to make a commitment to do this for myself, regardless if other people are doing it? Will my team commit to doing this on, you know, so we can try to work together to make improvements? Is our organization behind this to do this at an organizational level? If organizations really understand that process, then it's going to be the same old, same old. You're just going to be managing a problem and not creating the solution. But there are, like I said, you know, that there are those companies like the Zappos of the world that's how they started and have done a very good job of doing that. And
so I'm going to ask you again, as a leader, as a founder, how do I foster that process?
Well, yeah, you got to create that environment. You got to create resources and put it out there, awareness sessions, trainings, and provide collateral that inspires people to take responsibility for. You can't tell them to do it, but you can inspire. Be that example yourself. Be that example. Instead of saying it, you have to be it. You have to become it. You have to be it and become it to do it. So your example is always going to be the most powerful, and then using resources on a more consistent basis to share with people. And that's all you can do. It's a process. It can take time, because not everybody's going to change on the same level as you. And some people may never get it.
So what do you, so that brings up a great question. What do you do with those people who never get it?
Then if they're those people that don't get it, if for any reason that they're not fitting in with the team and they're not, you know, meeting their MBOs or objectives, then maybe perhaps they're just not suited to be in that organization. They might be better off somewhere else, where maybe now that their unwillingness to change might be okay somewhere else. But here we've all made the commitment to change, and you know, nothing against that person, but it just sort of, you know, things just sort of weed out that way. You know, that person will end up leaving on their own, or that again, that the numbers will not reflect, so that now that organization has a grounds to, you know, dismiss that person if required.
So earlier you mentioned clarity. How important is it to be really clear about what those expectations are for everybody in the organization?
Well, as I said, like, I don't like to talk about expectations, but I understand that's universally, as a, you know, society, that's how we operate. I like to talk about it from intentions. Again, what are your role and duties in on your team? We can start there at the team level. We may think we understand each other's role and duties, but a lot of times, again, we assume. If I understand my role and duties, and then I have an idea of like how I impact the other people I'm working with, so I can understand theirs and how I can impact them in a positive way. I can leverage my strengths that can help them. They can leverage their strengths to offset what I'm not good at. And if we, again, it's never going to be perfect, but if we can find better alignment or harmony to do that, these are the things that organizations that take the time to do that are going to find better systems and processes with people working together to produce at a higher level, to engage at a higher level, become more innovative. And again, you know, Sturdy, this is the difference between, you know, I like to use sports as an analogy, like football. Why do certain football teams go to the postseason and others don't? Well, somebody will automatically say, well, they have more talent and more skill. And then that's not true. There are a lot of teams that have far more talent than other teams. The reason why they go to the postseason is because they understand this process. They use EQ on some level, even if they don't even realize they're doing it. They own their role and duties. They understand each other's role and duties. They communicate at a high level. They lead by example, and they've created an environment and a culture for where people come in, they can plug people in. You don't necessarily have to be the most talented player to win consistently. It's a team that wins, not an individual. And these are the things that, again, that I like to use as analogies, that when organizations are operating that way and they can get better each and every day over in month and quarter and year to do this and be consistent with it, those are the ones that come out ahead.
So you say you don't like to look at expectations, you like to look at intentions. How am I clear about what intentions are relevant to the job, important to the job? How do I measure intention?
Yeah, I would say that again, you want to be able to look at what are the goals and objectives for your organization? What is it at the team level? How does that roll up to your organization's goals? And then it's understanding each other's goals as well. Now we have to look at what are my intentions now to do that? See, if I'm always operating from expectations, my mind is automatically going to be caught up in the control I can't control. Whether if we realize it or not, that's what's going to happen. We're going to get caught. This is why people operate from fear, why people operate from stress. Now, I'm not saying that stress goes away completely. You're never going to eliminate stress completely. But if you can reduce it by learning to focus from intentions. So when I have something and I know, let's say I know there's something due and I can only focus on what I can control, and there are certain things that I can't control, I would normally be worried about like meeting that deadline because I can't control what I can't control. I don't do that anymore. It is what it is. And I may not make the deadline because it was something that was beyond my control. I've done everything I could up to that point to do it. But I find that in the long run, that when you trust the process, that more or less the things that are beyond your control, when you let go of it, they do all tend to kind of somewhat work out. May not be to, again, that expectation that we all have, but to that level that is reasonable, doable. It's definitely something that people are not going to be upset about, and it's going to work out. And it just gets better and better when we can learn to focus on what we can control. So those are the things that I would recommend, that I recommend to people.
So can you maybe clarify for the audience a little bit about goal setting and how that differs from expectations or the intentions, how that goes into it? We have goals for the team, we have goals for the organization, maybe individual goals. How are you distinguishing that from?
So again, you can look at goals any way you like. I always say that, if you want to use, as long as your goals are specific, like SMART goals, they're very specific, clear, and concise. They're measurable. Breaking them down into more achievable and attainable goals. Break them down. When you leave a goal as is and there's nothing broken down, it becomes overwhelming because now we're caught up in the end result that, there's going to be a lot of things that are beyond our control in that way. But if we can break it down into actionable steps within our control each day, each week, each month, each quarter, these are the things that will lead to the end result. And are they relevant? So are we focused on the must, important and urgent? If it's the shoulds, well, it's important, but it's not urgent. If it's the coulds, well, it's important, but, or urgent, or it's going to be important, but I can delegate it. We can learn now to prioritize our time better, to really focus on what's really important in the moment within our control to maximize that. So it comes down to trusting that process. Instead of being emotionally attached to the result and the outcome, it's detaching from that and emotionally attaching to the intention, to what you can control in the moment. That's where I find when you channel your energy there, it tends to all come together. It's like doing a puzzle. If I got a puzzle and there's 100 pieces to complete the puzzle, I'm focused on the 12 pieces I have in my possession. The other 88 pieces, I can't worry about. I don't have them. I don't have any control over them. I can only work with what I have. But if I can focus on maximizing the most important priorities in that first, and then as new things come into my control, then I shift my priorities to whatever that is and keep doing that. These are the things that I find work really well in leading to better results long-term. It's just that it's because of that survival mindset that most people operate from. This is a hard thing to understand and shift from, but the people that really embrace emotional intelligence really dive into it and learn it and commit to doing something each and every day to get better, those are the ones that start to see the changes over time.
Awesome. Well, that's the, thank you. Thanks for sharing all that. Any other ideas, thoughts you want to leave us with before we wind down?
Yeah, I would just say that, you know, it's a process. It starts with one thing at a time. You know, when you try to change, do everything overnight, you're setting yourself up. So it's doing one thing at a time. I would start with a daily routine. Start with a daily routine. What, ask yourself, what, when you get up in the morning, is your routine before you go to work serving you? If it's not, then develop a new routine. Start with one thing that will help you to move you personally forward. Then after you do it for a month and you feel like you've been consistent and you haven't missed a day, add something else and then do it, repeat it. So eventually after 6 months, you might have five or six things now that you're doing that serve you to get your mind clear, focused, so you can now be focused on the priorities that matter. A lot of people are busy and not productive. That's another form of procrastination, operating out of fear in the past and the future. But learning, again, to be in the moment where fear is reduced, we can focus on intentions, trusting that process. I just find that those organizations that understand that and when their people operate that way, they're the ones that come out ahead.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here, Christopher. I appreciate it. Really appreciate the insights. And thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening.